back. WNST, Taos of Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. Yes, I am wearing my Chicken Palooza gear. Giddy up. It is Chicken Palooza, but it's also Maryland Crab Cake Tour time. We're going to be beginning next week, Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I'm not going to give it all away, but we're going to kick things off at Conrad's next Monday at the Seafood Market right here in Towson, near the radio station, right near Dr. Steve's office as well on Joppa, between Lock Raven and Pairing. We'll be there from 2 until 5 talking crabs, crabbing, crab cakes. And at some point, I'll be having a beer because we're doing 31 breweries. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill Window Nation and the Restaurant Association of Maryland. I tell you what, I put the Crab Cake Tour together in August. I did not realize that we would have relevant Oriole baseball, which we will have. Luke Jones watched some relevant Oriole baseball over the week, and we'll have some more relevant Orioles baseball all week long before they head to Cincinnati, as Earl Weaver would say. That sounds a little weird. I mean, the Ravens go there, but the Orioles rarely go. Is it Riverfront Stadium? Is it 1970? Luke Jones joins us now. He spent a weekend with the other Nasty Nester at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Orioles are winless against Nasty Nesters, I think, lifetime. And certainly when they had a Nasty Nester on their team, they couldn't figure it out. How are you, man? Happy weekend to you. Lots and lots of people at Oriole Park over the weekend. Good to see, even if some of them happen to be Yankees fans.
Yeah, no question about it. It was a fun weekend that did end with a little bit of a thud on Sunday. I mean, you get blanked by Nestor Cortez. You only get two runners in scoring position. It's a disappointing end to what was, I would say, really entertaining weekend of baseball. On Friday night, tough loss. Santander hits the home run late to make it a one-run game. Can't quite break through. But Saturday night, one of the games of the year. You know, you come back against Garrett Cole. You make some great plays in the field, some base running, some timely hitting. Ramon Urias gives you the big home run late to kind of seal it, give you some breathing room that you ended up needing in the ninth.
Every night there's a different star. That's the magic of Oriole baseball.
There is. It's amazing. You look at this team right now offensively, you've got a number of guys that are having kind of, if you look at it, adjusting for the fact that offense is down around baseball in general, I guess, other than Aaron Judge, right? But they have a ton of guys that are having an average to slightly above average year at the plate when you kind of look at it from a league adjusted standpoint, but no one having that great season. I mean, Austin Hayes has really tailed off over the last month after, we were talking about him at this time, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, maybe being an all-star. So he's tailed off, been a little bit banged up as well. But you go down the list, Trey Mancini had a rough weekend at the plate. Mountcastle, it's not that he hasn't hit, but he hasn't hit for as much power of late, hasn't hit a home run here of late. So you go down the list, Adley Rutschman's really heated up, but you need a couple more guys at the plate to really get going. And on Sunday, it kind of came to a head. Nestor Cortez, who, as you mentioned, has had a fantastic year. A Cinderella story. This guy was a Rule 5 pick that the Orioles didn't want. The Yankees clearly didn't want him.
Let's talk about this a little bit, because, it's not often that I get a Nasty Nestor reference here and the Yankees come in and, he's of all-star caliber. You were here when his ERA was 14 or infinity for about a minute and a half, right? And these Rule 5 guys and what the Orioles have tried to do over the last 5 years, which is just get breathing something like quad A major league pitching somewhere in. He's an interesting guy because every year during the Duquette dumpster dive era, right, they were always trying to do this with every Ryan Flaherty, everybody, right? And shipping guys back. They didn't ship a lot of guys back, right? I mean, a lot of these guys sort of stuck around until they stuck around, if they didn't stick around, because you bring them up. Where are you going? You can't hide him. And why would you want to hide him when you're going to lose 112 games anyway? To see a guy blossom like that you had in your own jersey at some point, it's a little disappointing. I mean, certainly to give him back to the Yankees even more than that, right?
I mean, I guess it can be, but go look at his numbers. I mean, he was terrible with the Orioles.
He couldn't say, right?
Keep in mind, he went back to the Yankees and then he went to Seattle. I mean, this is not a guy who just was with the Orioles 5 minutes, came back to the Yankees and was then great. And then you're saying, oh, wow, the Orioles really messed this up. I mean, this is a guy that, go look at his numbers, 7.71 ERA with the Orioles, albeit, it was a few innings. I mean, he didn't show anything to to make you really think, oh, wow, this guy is something. Goes back to the Yankees, you know, pitched out of the bullpen, had a 5.5 ERA in 19, goes to Seattle, you know, is there for a little while, and you know, suddenly goes back to the Yankees in last year at the age of 26, which, you know, isn't old, but you know, certainly not like prospect age anymore, well,
that's
right?
Where Arrieta figured it out, right? There's a lot of guys that figure it out around there.
But the difference is with him and Jake Arrieta is Nestor Cortez doesn't throw hard, right? I mean, he doesn't have that stuff that makes you go, wow. Now he's picked up enough deception and he's got those tricks. You know, he's got a little bit of, you know, a left-handed Louis Tion in him, where you see, you know, or Johnny Cueto in him, where he, you know, he's a little deceptive and gives you some different arm slots, gives you some different motions and windups and whatnot. But what he's done dating back to last year has just been incredible. And you know, I mentioned he doesn't throw hard, but he's been able to miss bats and he's been able to get strikeouts. And you know, he got strikeouts on Sunday. So I mean, the Orioles, you know, they had some hits, but you know, they never really seriously threatened him, other than, you know, maybe one inning. So he's just that guy. And I know we asked Robinson Chirinos, so Orioles backup catcher, after the game, you know, what makes him so good, and he just hides the ball really well, and it's something that he had to do, you know, because it was very apparent when he was in Baltimore, his first couple stints with the Yankees, you know, when he goes to Seattle for a minute, that, you know, this guy's got to, he needs some tricks if he's going to make it. And sure enough, he's figured that out, and we'll see how long it lasts. You do wonder, you know, will this be a 3 or 4 year type thing, or is this guy going to be pitching for the Yankees for the next decade? I mean, time will tell, but certainly the Orioles, who were able to come alive with the bats as the game went on Friday and Saturday, that just didn't happen for them on Sunday. You know, they had one extra base hit, two guys in runners with who got into scoring position, and you know, they just didn't mount much of a threat. So, you know, that's where I said a series that was really fun, really entertaining the first couple days, not as entertaining, not as fun for the Orioles on Sunday, as it just kind of ended in a thud. But again, Nestor Cortez has been doing that to a lot of people this year, you know, hence why we saw him in the All-Star game this past week.
Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke, and you can, of course, follow him. He's going to be in Owings Mills as well. As much as I have Oriole Park behind me, it is a purple week around here very, very soon, as we have preseason football games going on this weekend on the television as well. Let's talk about the Orioles pitching a little bit here. You know, Kramer, not bad, but Aaron Judge, and you talk about the Orioles not hitting the ball well. This is what happens when a team that's playing 750 ball comes in, right? I mean, a team that's built for $250 million, a team that's built to win 105, 110 games, looks like anyway, that would be the case. In the case of Kramer, not an awful outing. I mean, they fought pretty well against the Yankees over the weekend for it being as out of whack as it is financially, spiritually, where it would have been out of whack 2 or 3 months ago, where it's been out of whack for the last 5 years, quite frankly, even when the Yankees were a little out of whack. But Aaron Judge and the really premier players, when you're talking about the Orioles don't have a star, right? Rutschman, okay, he's coming, whatever. Mullins last year, Hayes for a minute, Mountcastle can hit home runs. Mancini's a first baseman. I'll hear all that. But when the best team in baseball comes in and you give them hell, and, you know, when you're close, I mean, I would say from the pitching standpoint, close, way closer than it used to be, closer than the Red Sox were to the Blue Jays the other night.
Yeah, right. I mean, how about that story with what the Red Sox have been going through of late and how they're just getting their brains bashed in.
Well, the week before the trading deadline, too, it creates all sorts of mayhem for buying and selling, right? This is
no question.
This is sort of a treacherous week to be struggling or to be too good like the Orioles right now.
Right. I mean, and in the case of the Orioles, there's still that sense of they're much better, but they still have a ways to go here. I think anyone, even the most optimistic Orioles fan, acknowledges that. And that's why I've said so much. For me, it's really going to be this offseason as far as, all right, do you, you know, is it flipping a switch or at least turning a dial, I guess I would say, in terms of you're starting to improve the major league roster. But certainly you look over the course of the weekend, I think, yeah, you're disappointed you lose 2 out of 3. But as you pointed out, I mean, you're talking about a Yankees team that's completely run away with the division. I mean, that's obvious. Even acknowledging the last 3.5, 4 weeks, they had played a little more mortal type baseball. The Yankees got swept by Houston in the doubleheader on Thursday, so they were a little ticked off coming into Baltimore. But know, as far as the Orioles, I mean, you know, Wells wasn't great on Friday. Lyles held on and gave them a chance on Saturday. But if you heard his post-game comments, it was clear he didn't think he pitched particularly well, but got out of a couple spots where the game could have gotten away from them and didn't. And then they were able to come back against Gerrit Cole. But you just look at this team right now, it's improved. The defense certainly has been massive. I mean, we've talked about Mateo at short. We've talked about the outfield defense. I mean, Ryan McKenna makes a great catch in the ninth inning on Saturday night that, you know, if he doesn't make that catch on that bloop down the right field line, you know, we could be talking about the Orioles being swept instead of getting that win on Saturday night. So, you look at the rotation, it's battled, it's competed. It's certainly better than it had been the last few years when you have these games where you're down 7-0 in the second inning and you're thinking, okay, Stevie Wilkerson, is it going to be him or which position player is going to pitch the ninth inning tonight? Because you're just going to go through your entire bullpen. So, you're not having those types of stretches anymore, and it's given them a chance that the rotation's been just good enough that the bullpen hasn't been too overworked, and the bullpen's done a hell of a job this year. So you get all those elements, and as I mentioned, maybe not getting fantastic years offensively, but guys that are at least having slightly above average seasons, that's where you get into a territory where you're hovering around 500 at this stage of the game. Now, I think what is tough, and we talked about this before the All-Star break going into that Rays series down at the Trop, you had this 10-game stretch, and so far you look at it, lost 2 out of 3 to the Rays, lost 2 out of 3 to the Yankees. Nothing to be embarrassed about, but at the same time, as you're getting to the trade deadline and you're looking at this thing, are they going to be good enough? Are they really going to be good enough to hang in that wild card race? Seriously, right? To the point where, not even talking as much about them being buyers as much as, still thinking about this from a big picture sense. And, you just kind of look at where it is right now. Toronto in the wild card lead, Tampa Bay, Seattle, and then you still have Cleveland, Chicago, the Red Sox, and the Orioles. So, they're 3.5 games out of that last spot going into play on Monday, but there's a lot of teams in that mix there, and that's where you do look at this thing. And I do look at the rotation as much as they battled. I still look at it and say, is that going to hold up for 2.5, not 2.5, but 2 more months to really have them seriously in that race? That's where I'm a little more skeptical. But that said, that doesn't mean I think they're going to fall apart. Doesn't mean that they can't play very compelling, still relevant baseball, mathematically speaking. And hey, you play in the AL East by default, you have a chance to be spoiler and to really upset some teams here down the stretch and continue to play good baseball. So, the opportunity is going to be there. We'll see what happens here against the Rays. They've fared a little bit better against Tampa Bay than going down to the Trop, where the Rays, you wouldn't think it's a home field advantage because there's no one in the ballpark down there, but they just seem to play well there, as most teams do at home. But I think, these next 4 games and then going on the road now after that against not so great teams that frankly the Orioles should be able to beat and to have some success against, that'll take us past the trade deadline. Again, I've never expected that there's going to be some kind of major deal that's going to, qualify them as a buyer. Maybe you can find someone that, you have some eyes towards 2023 with, but at the same time, we'll get a better idea of where this team really is. I mean, they played they played really well over the last month, but you go back to the beginning of May, they've played solid baseball since then. So it's been quite a while. Just a matter of, okay, are they ready to take the next step, or is it going to be they're going to continue to hover around 500, maybe move a game or two above, maybe fall back? And we saw them fall back a little bit this weekend, but overall, it's not something that I look at and say, I'm terribly discouraged about. You'd like to find a way to have Aaron Judge not kill you. But then again, you're talking about a guy who's, maybe going to break Maris's club record for the Yankees.
Maybe don't pitch to him.
And that's the big thing. I mean, I struggle with this because I don't, I understand the mentality of not just wanting to put guys on base because you do have other guys in that lineup who can burn you as well. But at the same time, when you see what he's doing, and I would say even on Sunday, I mean, Kramer struck him out twice, but that hanging curve that he threw, I mean, that's just not a that's not a major league starter kind of quality of a pitch.
Right? I mean, again, this is what I said about Kramer. Right. I mean, he threw, what, 90 pitch, whatever, five innings, you know, it's one pitch against the Yankees, against Aaron Judge. That's not going to happen necessarily against the Tigers or against maybe against the Angels because of the players they have. But you're not going to get beaten on one pitch. With the Yankees, you can have a perfectly good afternoon, but they have enough guys in the middle of the lineup, and especially Judge. Getting beat by him, that's a little tougher to take when you lose.
No question. No question about it. And believe me, I'll hear the arguments of pitching around him in some of those spots. No question about it. I also understand the mentality. And you know, Hyde was asked about it after the game. You know, the idea of, you know, is it tough there? Do you try to walk him? You know, it's two outs. You know, you understand that you don't want to put more guys on base, theoretically. But at the same time, who in that lineup, despite the fact that they have other legitimate all-star hitters in that lineup, who do you really want to beat you, you know, or who do you not want to beat you? Aaron Judge tops the list. So again, easier said than done. I think it's, you know, I even had people on my timeline saying, well, you know, throw fastballs up and in and then breaking pitches low and away. Well, okay. If it's that simple, then why is the guy have 37 home runs? I mean, he has punished the Orioles, and he's punished the Orioles specifically over these last 5 years. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Look at the numbers in his career. And, you know, he's faced a lot of quad A and triple A pitching at the major league level against the Orioles over the last 5 years or so. But this guy's terrific. You know, there's a reason why he's going to get an insane amount of money. And there's a reason why there's a lot of angst, a lot of concern in the Bronx as far as, you know, Yankees fans being afraid of losing this guy. He's that good. So, again, I hear it. Yeah, there's certainly some spots I'd like to see them be a little more careful and pitch around them. But, you know, this is as close as it gets to Barry Bonds in today's game as far as a guy that's just punishing absolutely punishing pitchers. And the Orioles certainly, they took their licks over the weekend against Aaron Judge. That's for sure.
Luke Jones is here. We are talking some Orioles baseball. We'll get up on the I want to talk about the trading deadline a little bit here because we got a week out on it. We'll talk some Rays later on, and obviously you're going to get yourself lost in the Purple Kingdom, and Lamar's here, and he's going to play allegedly. We're going to ask him, is he really going to play, or are we just going through training? I'm not fully clear on Lamar, you know, in any way, but I'm not really fully clear on Mike Elias this week. I think they're not going to get overwhelmed for Santander or for Mancini. Fans seem to like it, but, you know, they're a game under 500. They got eight teams in the way, right? I mean, to be the worst playoff team, maybe, if they were to make it. If I'm running the team, I can't think about this year. They're not winning the World Series this year, right? Like, they could create some excitement. They could play a game or two in October if they did this or did that. And the notion that Hall, Means, you know, these Zimmerman, these guys that were a part of the rotation, two of those three aren't going to be part of the rotation down the stretch. So I don't know that they're really a contender. I don't know that they get anything back. Do you expect a deal? I sort of do, because of Elias's pedigree of not having a heart, not having we have to keep Trey Mancini because I can't, like, we need to make the team. We need to win the World Series in 2025. And I think that's all he's thinking about, not necessarily what's going on right now. It will be interesting to see how, not just for the Orioles, but how everyone plays the trading deadline, because the days of giving your three prospects up for Trey Mancini or the bat or the arm, or even if it's Gerrit Cole, I don't know that teams want to give away their Adley Rutschmans and their DL Halls for anything. So I don't know where the, you know, other than financially in some way of saving a dollar or two, why they would make a deal this week. What would be the upside of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough. I mean, to piggyback off your last point there, they're giving up their Rutschmans and those types, but it's for Juan Soto, right? I mean, it's for that kind of, you know, a generational kind of trade, which, you know, we'll see if he's moved at the deadline, or we'll see if the Nationals.
The Dodgers, they sent us Kramer and these guys and whatever, and then they didn't even give Machado money. They didn't even sign him. You know what I mean?
Right.
So part of this is you're going to give away the house. You better sign Soto. You better give him $400 million. You're going to deal for him.
Oh, no question about that. I mean, and it'll be fascinating to see if he's moved now, or if it, does become a case where the Nationals hold on to him until the offseason. Or, you know, and I was even listening to, you know, a national show over the weekend, and there was even a thought of, you know, you acquire Soto and maybe it's a team, you know, and I think they use the Dodgers as an example. Maybe it's a case where the Dodgers acquire him trying to win a World Series this, you know, this year, and then they move them and they recoup whatever prospects they like from some other team. So, you know, it'll be interesting, but, you know, to get back to
the, did a lot more of that 20 years ago when they rent Mike Piazza for a week and a half.
Yeah. I mean, it's career, right. Right. I mean, generally speaking, and again, Soto is a different animal because you're talking about a 23-year-old generational guy who looks like he is already on a path to be a Hall of Famer. That's how good he already is. And
well, there's a perfect example of the Orioles giving a kid $400 million. That's the guy, right? I mean, sure, they're going to have their own issues with Rutschman and whoever else their stars are. But like, if you're going all in to win, you better have one of them.
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. Although I would say at the same time, I mean, the Angels have had Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, and well, that hasn't gotten them very far. So, I mean, it does speak to, yeah, you want to have stars, right? But at the same time, it's much more than that. And that's where the Orioles are still in this kind of
situation. The big story for me is that the Soto not wanting to be a National, right? Like, we just came five. They're no longer an expansion franchise. They've been around two decades. They've won championships. They're in a big city that's not playing in Cincinnati or whatever. It's fascinating that they can't figure that out. I mean, it's starting to feel like they're sort of a bruised franchise to some degree, not just with the fan base or whatever the Washington sports fan would be for baseball, because baseball's got problems everywhere, right, in regard to drawing and whatnot. But the fact that they brought him a Brinks truck and he said, nah. I mean, that almost sounds Oriole-esque to some degree. Nah, to the Brinks truck when you're 23.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you look at the average annual value and his age and everything, was it really that great of an offer? I know what the total lump sum of money looks like, but was it really that special of an offer where this kid couldn't say no to it? Especially when he looks at the reality of where the Nats are right now. I mean, the Nats are where right now they're where the Orioles were a couple years ago. I mean, that's how bad they are right now.
Look at the Orioles mismanaged Machado, right? In regard to you have this player and he's special. I mean, they're going to have to do this with Rutschman. You know, we're not long off of that. I mean, we're 3 years away from Rutschman.
He just got called. Or not. Well, I don't know if I'd say that's right around the corner just yet, but your point's taken. And look, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, if you're him or the case with Machado, which, you know, the biggest thing that I took issue with the Orioles was they just waited so long to deal him. I mean, the time to deal him would have been after that wild card loss to Toronto. They should have dealt him and Zach Britton at that point. If they had done that, Dan Duquette could still be running the Orioles right now, theoretically. You know, they could have been in a much better position and maybe only had a 2 or 3 year rebuild as opposed to what's been 5 years. So again,
see,
that's
how these other teams handle these things is interesting, because sure, we all sit here and say, well, the Orioles screwed this up. The Orioles screwed this
lots
up
of teams screw things up. Right.
Right. Sure. And now I don't know what more you can do than offer the kid a Brinks truck. They never offered Machado the Brinks truck, right? Like, if they would brought Machado $200 million in year three, maybe, you know, maybe, I don't know, but these are the things all these franchises have. Look, the Yankees are dealing with this with their guy right now, right? Because there's the big bad wolf will be out there signing. The thought that Trout's going to be an Angel for life, right? The fact that Ohtani might get dealt this week, right? Maybe. Right.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, look at the NBA. I mean, I know they're different sports, but player movement is just, it's just part of it now. It really is. I mean, And I remember talking about this and romanticizing this 20 years ago when Cal was doing his retirement tour. And we were talking about the fact that in 2001, that there weren't many guys that played their entire career somewhere. And it's only just changed that much more dramatically 20 years later. I mean, those guys are few and far between in any sport, let alone just talking about baseball. But to bring it back, because you asked me about the Orioles specifically, do I expect a trade? I think almost by default, you feel like there's going to be some movement. You know, it doesn't mean they're going to trade five guys. You know, it doesn't mean that, you know, that this is going to look like a fire sale or anything like that. You know,
this is his week to get on the phone. This is Mike Elias's week to get on and maybe get a kid he liked in Peoria somewhere, right?
There's a little bit of that, but I also just think at the same time, there's also an argument to be made here that you do need to clear the deck a little bit. And what I mean by that is, Sunday was a perfect example of that. Adley Rutschman, day game after a night game, they didn't want to have him catch, which is smart. You don't want to run this kid into the ground. He's 24, but he's still a rookie, and you want to keep him fresh, and you want to keep him fresh down the stretch. So he DHs, but we know that Mancini and Mountcastle have shared the first base and DH roles, right? So you want to keep their bats in the lineup. So you put Mancini in right field, which isn't optimal from a defensive standpoint.
A little bit of an
adventure. But then, okay, Santander is out of the lineup then, right? So you do have a logjam here. And oh, by the way, you do have Kyle Stowers playing at, corner outfield at Triple A Norfolk. Lots of extra base hits. You'd like to get him to the majors, because I would say this much. I feel, even though Santander has walked a little bit more this year, and he's having a fine year. He's not having a bad year by any stretch of the imagination. Big clutch home run on Friday night to get the Orioles back in the game. But I don't think he's a guy that projects to be a piece for them when they're making the playoffs and theoretically having a chance to win the World Series in a few years. So, if you can move Santander, if you can move Mancini, just because Trey's going to be a free agent. And look, I think Trey, he's a good soldier and he's a team oriented guy, but Trey also understands the business side of this, and he's not playing first base every day. So that's hurting his defensive value per se. He wants to play every day. He'd like to be a first baseman. I think Trey would like to win and win now. I mean, he's 30 years old. He knows that the free agent market for someone that fits his profile is not going to warrant a monster deal. So, there's something to be said that, you could also be doing Trey Mancini a little bit of a solid by dealing him at the deadline. Now, are you going to get a whole lot for him? No, of course not. If you deal Jordan Lyles, are you going to get a whole lot for him? On a deal where he's going to be a free agent pending a club option for 11 million, I guess it is, which I doubt anyone would exercise. But you're not going to get a lot for him. And what does that mean for your rotation from a functionality standpoint, just getting through games and being competitive? So, that's where it is tough. And I do look at Santander having two more years of club control. Jorge Lopez, being an all-star closer, but you look at his age, 2 years of club control with him. We know the volatility of relievers. And if there's one area that we've seen Elias be a little more eager to deal from, it is the bullpen. So could you see, a couple deals where, maybe they trade a Santander and a Lopez, or they package Mancini and Lopez, and you get some guys who might have a chance to help you in the next year or two? Sure. Do I think it's going to be this mass kind of sell-off? No, because to your point, you're just not going to get a whole lot for some of the names we mentioned. I mean, unless you're looking to deal Cedric Mullins, you're just not going to get a whole lot. So, and I'm not saying the Orioles should or will do that. So I think that's where I look at this thing and say, okay, Jorge Lopez being 29, he's a good story, but again, we know relievers. How many times have we seen guys really good for a year? They catch lightning in a bottle, and then they kind of go back to being what they had been previously in their career. So
George Sherrill.
Right. Exactly. I mean, if someone wants to wow me for Jorge Lopez, and when I say wow me, that doesn't mean that you're getting a top 20 prospect in all of baseball, but getting a piece or two that has a chance to help you, a guy that has a chance to be Jorge Lopez in a year or two, I'm probably willing to do that. And I'm looking at Felix Bautista and say, okay, he can step into my closer's role then. And you just kind of
sub 500 sort of, exactly. 79 or 83 win team or whatever it's going
to be. Right. I mean, you still have to be looking at this from a big picture sense. And again, that's not me saying that I want to make trades just for the sake of making trades. I don't want to trade guys to get 17-year-old Dominican prospects that are nothing more than lottery tickets. I'm not looking to save salary at this point. I'm not. But if I can make a deal or two that's going to help me for the future potentially, and also give me a chance to clear the deck for getting Kyle Stowers up to the majors and playing right field every day, that's where I'm a little more inclined to move a Mancini or a Santander. Maybe not both of them, but I feel there's an argument to be made that, if there's one area they have some strength and some depth, it's outfield. If you look at what they have coming up through their system. So long story short, yeah, I expect a deal or two. Do I think it's going to be anything that's going to rock the foundation of the franchise? Absolutely not. Because whether Trey Mancini's here the last 2 months or not, he's not going to be back. I mean, I think it's clear. And I think Trey understands that too, that, you know, he's going to be somewhere else next year. So if he has a chance to go, and maybe not the Mets because they got Vogelbach from the Pirates, but if he has a chance to go somewhere and play in the playoffs, let the guy do that. He's been through so much. He's already 30. Let him go. So from that standpoint, remember, Trey is the other part of this compared to just thinking about it from the Orioles standpoint. So I expect we'll see a deal or two at least by the deadline. Just don't know if it's going to be anything foundation altering for the Orioles and their rebuild.
Let him go somewhere and win and get even for not winning the ESPY last week. Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him, Luke, at WNST.net. He'll probably be at Oriole Park most evenings and certainly be in Owings Mills during the afternoons beginning on Wednesday as a Purple Camp begins. Still waiting on the purple plume of smoke for the Lamar Jackson contract. We'll be watching that as well. You can find us out on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation and the Restaurant Association of Maryland. First up, next Monday, we will be at Conrad's Seafood Market right here in Towson, right near the radio station, Joppa Road and the Lock Raven. Stop down, say hello. We'll be there all afternoon on Monday. And then I have a whole litany of breweries and crab cake places we're going to be. I'll be releasing that schedule a little later on in the week. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.